Hey, friends. Welcome back to the More Jodi podcast. I'm Jodi, the girl who says what everyone is thinking, unapologetically myself, as often as possible. I used to see this as a problem, but now I see it as a gift. Vulnerability, connection, and embracing challenges are just a few of my very favorite things. And I'm here to help you push a little more, dig a little deeper, and see more possibility in your one beautiful life. Andy Rooney once said, "Everyone wants to live on top of the mountain, but all the happiness and growth occurs while you're climbing it." That is precisely what this podcast is about. Thanks for tuning in. Andrea Moot, welcome back to the More Jodi podcast. How are you doing, friend?
I'm great. Thanks for having me again.
This is the best. This is like, I love having people back because like I didn't wash my hair for you. I feel so relaxed. I hope you sense that in me today.
Yeah. Well, I felt the same way because like I didn't put on makeup or anything either, which I did last time.
It's like now we're just old friends having a chat. And I said to you, I want to talk about risks. I have a podcast coming out tomorrow. No, what day is today? I have it coming out this week. Number 83 about doing hard things, because it's something I say all the time and it's become such a cliche. You know, sayings and quotes used to be like so cool 10 years ago when the internet was around before, but when, you know, social media started, and it's always like, you got this, which is like one of my biggest pet peeve statements, but those things are easy to say and hard to do. So when you said, yeah, love taking risks, I'm like, oh my gosh, yes. Let's have a whole conversation about taking the risk, taking the next step, because so many people have that failure to launch and they sit there and they hum and haw, and then, and usually the opportunity passes them by. And, yeah, you know, it's such a fine line between wisdom and living in the moment, right? Like you've got to have little bits of all of those things to make stuff kind of work. And so first of all, for people who didn't hear you on my podcast a few weeks ago, why don't you just tell people who Andrea is really quickly in case they didn't catch that episode?
Okay. Well, I am 52. I don't know why I always start with my age. I think most people don't divulge their age.
But I think after I like 32, they're like, I'm here. My name's Andrea. You're like, I'm 51 and a half and three quarters.
I'm proud to be in my 50s. I think it's relevant for sometimes with the conversation, just to understand the age of a person. I don't know. That's just me.
She's lived, guys. She's lived some years.
Yeah. And I am married to my best friend. And as we talked about in the last time, we've been married for a million years. Yeah. We have two boys who are young adults now, in their early 20s. I am a chef and pastry chef turned food blogger, which I did not too long after I sold my bakery that I used to own in Toronto. And I live in Ontario, but I moved out of Toronto and I live in a small town now, about a 2 hour, 2.5 hour drive east of Toronto.
Napping. So
kind of semi-retired, I guess I would say. I'm still working. I mean, the blog is actually like more work than most people would expect or understand. And I actually just got a little part-time job here in town at a local restaurant.
What?
Making desserts 2 days a week. I didn't tell you that before.
Oh, that's like so fun. Is that fun?
Well, I'm hoping it will be. I haven't actually been in a like commercial kitchen environment since I had my bakery and I sold it in 2018. So it's been a really long time. But wow. I've spent the past 3 years or so, I guess now, basically working by myself. And although I am more introverted than I am extroverted, it kind of gets to you after a while. Like,
kind of tired of yourself.
Just me not, you know, I have no social life except for when, you know, we have friends visit for the weekend or, you know, you invite me onto your podcast.
Mm-hmm. I do feel like conversing with people at work does fill your bucket. It does, because yeah. I'll have like, I'm having a standing meeting with a few girls at work at the end of the day on Fridays now. And they're in Ontario as well. And I'm on the West Coast, and it makes me so happy. Like I get off and I feel like I'm kind of vibrating. Like, I'm like, oh, that was so fun. Like, right. So, I mean, there's not enough can be said for how important those interactions are.
Totally. Totally. Even if it's not like, you know, that I'm making some amazing friends or anything like that, it's just like, get out into the world and look at people in the eyes and just have a conversation, be with human beings and not just my dog and two cats.
Imagine like if someone had said this, it's going to sound weird. If someone heard that in 2018, they'd be like, what is she, a hermit? Why is she always at home? Like, but this is my life now too. And I do. Yeah. That's a whole other thing is. Yeah, that's a whole other thing. But I think that's really cool that you're doing that. I would dream of having a job. No one would hire me because I am not a pastry chef, but I make really good desserts. And like, that would be a dream job for me, 2 days a week to go in somewhere and bake stuff or like make desserts for them. Like, that's so funny. I didn't even know that could be a thing. Yeah. That's so
well,
cool.
I mean, not to toot my own horn, but I think I sent the resume and like they called me an hour later because I think that in this small town that I live in, somebody with my number of years of and level of experience doesn't walk through the door every day. And so they were kind of, you know, in the interview process, it was sort of like, well, you know, when do you want to work and how much do you want? Like they were asking me like when and how much and all the stuff. So I felt it was really nice for me actually to just feel really wanted, you know.
Yeah,
cool. All my years of experience are paying off in my quote unquote old age.
this is why you need to lead with your age, because even when you look at all the stuff you've done and you say how long you've been married and then you say you're semi-retired, all of a sudden people are like, is she 64? And you're like, no, I'm like so young and hip and fresh. And right. So if someone has lived, like really lived and done a lot of things, you really do need to give your age, or else less people age you more than necessary. Right.
Yeah. Because
some people work at the same place for 25 years, or some people like do different things, and you've really lived. So yeah, you should always lead with how old you are. So they're not like, wow, looks sneaky young, but is she actually 66? Right. So stick with leading with your age. That's fine.
Living my best life at the moment, I would say, like, especially now getting this little job, because I'm really looking forward to just getting out of the house a couple of days a week and, you know, also getting to know some people in the community, because my husband still works in Toronto and he's there every other week. So that's another adding to my loneliness, right? Is every other week I'm also actually by myself with not even seeing him, you know, off work hours. And so anyway, we don't, you know, we have no avenue to get to know people at the moment. And so this, you know, this will be good too for
connections,
that.
Connections are really big, a really big thing. And that's, I wish I could come taste your desserts. I'm super jealous. I would.
Maybe one day.
I would love them. So yeah, why don't we talk a little bit? I would love for you to kind of explain some of the biggest risks that you've taken, and even like, something we were saying before we recorded here is that there's a mindset to taking risks, and you have to face things, setbacks, pivots, whatever. Some people look at them and they're like, well, I failed. And those are the people that would say that or talk like that in that tone are usually the people who probably don't take risks. Cause I don't ever think of the stuff that hasn't been like perfect as a failure. I'm like, oh, it was a pivot. It was whatever. And I know you share that sentiment as well. So I want people to, as they listen to this episode, to think of that as like really a foundation for this conversation, is that there is a mindset around taking risks. And the most successful people have the same mindset as Andrea and I. Okay. So very successful people. But I think there's a whole mindset around it. And if you're that person who has that really negative mindset, you're going to have to push past that before you even start taking risks.
Yes. Right? Yes. Like, because you're going to talk yourself out of anything before you actually try to do it.
Yeah.
If you have that negative, like you already decide it's not going to work before, you know, even giving it a try or even taking it to the next level in the thought process.
Well, yeah. And like the saying goes, whether you think you can or you can't, you're right. It's so true. And on this episode, on episode number 83, where I talk about the three things in my life that are for some reason, like technically so easy to somebody else, but they're like big things to me. We all have different things. And that's where brainstorming with other people helps, because something that I might be like, Andrea, I can't do X, Y, Z. You're like, Jody, I have like 15 things I could give you as resources for how you could do that. That's why being in relationship and connecting, you know, when you have ideas, because like inspiration just doesn't grow in a vacuum, right? Like, and I have always find that action produces motivation. You take your first steps, you get a little encouraged, you get a little fired up, you have a conversation, and the ball just keeps rolling. But if you sit alone in your negative mindset in your head, you'll go nowhere.
That's right.
Right. So, take us through some of the biggest risks that you've taken and your experience with that.
Well, I mean, it goes back to what you said about it being a mindset, and also it snowballing. And the more you do it, the easier it becomes, I guess, because like it started for me at a pretty young age. I would say the first big thing that I did was when I was, I guess I was around 18, I took a gap year between going to college, and I just decided one day I was going to get on the bus and go to New Orleans by myself from Toronto.
Holy cow. How long is that bus ride?
Well, I don't know, because I never got to New Orleans.
Oh my gosh.
Because a whole bunch of stuff went wrong actually along the way. Like they wouldn't let me across the border here, first of all, because they thought I was a runaway. I think I might've actually been 17 actually. Because I was young, because my birthday's in December, you know, so I finished high school earlier. You know what I mean? Like I was younger and I looked young for my age. And anyway, they wouldn't let me across. They thought I was a runaway. And anyway, I don't want to spend too much time on the story, but then I was determined. I'm like, well, I'm not going home. So then I was like, okay, I'll get on the bus and go to Vancouver, and then I'll go and cross the border down there, because I'd heard that it was easier to get across the border on the West Coast than it was. Now,
for people listening, this is like five provinces over. This is not, I'm going to the next town. This is like, how many was on the bus?
Three solid days. Like,
oh my gosh.
Night, like with the bus going nonstop night and day.
Yeah.
Anyway, to make this story short, because it's not the most exciting thing for sure, I ended up going down to Los Angeles and then back diagonally across the United States to Toronto. So I was gone. I think I was gone for like a couple of months by myself. So, you know, it was kind of a big deal in all these big, scary cities, like places like San Francisco and Los Angeles. Now, I did have, my parents had friends in lived just outside of San Francisco. And my stepdad had a friend who lived in Los Angeles. So I had like some touch points of like adults who could like call my parents and tell them that I was okay. Because of course, back then it was before the internet.
Right. Like what year would this have been?
That would have been like in like late 80s.
Oh my gosh. For just a quick second, I just want to interject. One of my biggest risks, one of my first ones, was went to Europe by myself at 21. And it was that I booked it with a friend and then she canceled. And I don't know if she actually ever booked it. So I feel like when I booked it, I knew I was alone. I don't totally remember now, but same thing. It was like, I remember ending up on Notting Hill because that movie had come out, and Notting Hill is actually like not a good area to be in by yourself. And it was like 6 o'clock at night and it was dark. And I remember finding out after that night that that was like not where you should be by yourself on Notting Hill. And so I think of you and all the things that you just don't know anything. In life though, we like, as we age, we like to think that we know a lot of stuff. But there's this subtle art of not giving an F, this Mark Manson. I love this book. And he says, you really don't know anything. You think you have this perception that you know stuff. And that's what's cool, is that young people proceed without knowing anything. And often as you age, you're like, oh, well, now that I'm older, I would have thought this through and thought of all the risks. Yes. Well, just because you think of the risks doesn't mean every one of those risks is going to happen. And that's what's so interesting with being young and taking a trip like that, and how that produces more confidence in you that like, I don't have to have all the answers before I go and I'm still okay.
Yeah, exactly. And then, you know, there were a few other things like my then boyfriend, now husband, and I decided, again, it was during the same gap year that we were actually, I think this might have happened before my trip to the States. I can't remember because that was a really, 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 really long time ago now.
It's a few years ago.
Like late 80s. Like you, you probably weren't even born.
No, I'm 40. I was born in 82. So I was 8.
Okay. Okay.
And yeah. I'd have been looking at you at like 18, being like, wow, she's so cool. So brave.
But yeah, we decided to move to Vancouver out towards your area. Wow. Just because we wanted to have the experience of living in a big city and all that stuff before going to university and whatnot. And we were like bored with Toronto. And so we were like, we need to go somewhere new and exciting. And we literally just like packed up a huge crate with all of our stuff in it and took the train out there and found jobs and yeah. And then we didn't end up staying because we realized when we were there that what we really wanted to do was travel around. So we ended up sending all of our stuff home and getting backpacks and a tent. We were like bussing it and camping and stuff all through the Rocky Mountains and stuff. So yeah. So then there was that. And then I would say that though, the next big thing that we did together, again, this is my husband and I, before we got married, was we took off and decided to move to Thailand. And this was in the early 90s, in 1993 to be exact. There was a recession happening at the time. And my husband was just graduating from university as a landscape architect. And there was basically no work for landscape architects in Toronto at that time at all.
Wow.
And one of his profs, he was just out, you know, drinking with, you know, school buddies and professors. And one of his professors who traveled a lot and traveled and worked a lot, Alex said, well, they were talking about how shitty the job market was at the time. And Alex said, well, if I was going to go anywhere else in the world to work, where should I go? And he said, definitely Bangkok or Kuala Lumpur. And so then that night, he literally came home and got into bed and said to me, so how do you feel about moving to Thailand or Malaysia? And I was like, what? I was done college at this point. Like I had already started working at like my first job after getting out of college. And I was just like, yeah, let's do it, man.
Hey, friends, I know you're really into this episode, so I'm just going to take a few seconds of your time. I want to tell you about an incredible company out of Eucalypt, BC. Mint Cleaning and its hilarious founders, Monica and Robin, are changing the face of the cleaning industry with non-toxic, eco-friendly, refillable products made in small batches with essential oils and love. They have been so gracious as to give my listeners 15% off their first purchase. If you go to mintcleaningproducts.com and use code Jody 15 at checkout, you will get this incredible experience straight to your home, all the way from the west coast of Canada. So please take a second, go give these girls a follow, Mint Cleaning on Instagram, and then use JODY15 at checkout.
And so we did a bit of research to decide which country we wanted to move to. And then we were just like, okay, we're moving to Bangkok. And he went there without having a job or anything, because that was the advice that he was given, was that you have to show up on their doorstep. You know, you can't like apply for jobs from here. And so we're like, okay, well, let's do it. Like it was that whole thing about the mindset. Like we just kind of thought, what's the worst case scenario? You know, we go to Thailand and you can't find a job. And then we come home. Like we've still gone to Thailand. Like, you know, I didn't even know where Thailand was when he asked me if I wanted to go there. Cause like, we're back in the early 90s. There's no internet.
You're like, let me find my Encarta or my encyclopedias. Where's my
totally
map?
We pulled out the big Atlas book.
Yeah. Every family had that book.
And I'm like, oh my God, it's all the way over there. Like it's literally on the other side of the world. And you know, we'd never even eaten Thai food before because Thai food wasn't a thing back then. Like
Yeah.
not at all like it is now. I mean, you have to be buried under a rock, I think, to not have eaten Thai food or at least even heard of Thai food because there's Thai restaurants everywhere. But anyway, we had no idea what we were doing or what we were getting into. And it was a huge shock going there. Like it was massive culture shock.
Well, I'd like to point out that when you, of all the places, like I'm a pretty positive person, but when you're like, what could go wrong? I was like, you could get kidnapped and sex trafficked. You'll shit your pants for sure eating Thai food for the first time. Like my roommate pooped her pants like twice in Thailand, and so that was a big joke. Was like, if you go to Thailand, you will certainly soil your panties. So you're like, what could go wrong? Like of all the places, I actually have a few things in my head that could go wrong for a young girl in her 20s, right? Like, so that's hilarious. And once again, that goes to your whole, like you and your husband obviously live that out really well. That whole, like what, like you didn't take time to answer the questions of what could go wrong. Because I feel like if you asked a person with like more of a negative mindset, they would be like, oh, Andrea, I have a list of 15 things that could go wrong that happens to people in Thailand. So
Yeah, or even just all
to
the
celebrate
questions,
that.
right? Like
Yeah.
where would we live? How do we even know where we should live? Like we don't
We
know
don't
where the
speak
bad
the
neighborhoods
language.
are. Yeah, we don't speak the
Yeah.
language. We don't, I mean, never mind that. Even the script is completely different there, so you can't even read it.
Right.
So I actually think that not having access to the internet is helpful in not getting you scared about things that you don't know about, right? Because you're not going and Googling all kinds of stuff, you know,
Right.
and like you were saying about people that you already know who've traveled to Thailand, so you have heard the stories or whatever for, well, we didn't have any of that. Like we didn't, nobody that we knew had ever been there. We didn't have the internet to look anything up that could make us, you know, feel nervous about it. Or, I mean, well, obviously we were nervous about it, but you
Right.
know, the excitement of this new adventure far outweighed any, you know, hesitation or trepidation about it for sure. And so, you know, in the end, he did find a job actually pretty quickly after we arrived there. And we found a great place to live and everything just fell into place, you know, because if you're smart and you're savvy and, you know, you're gonna look for your help and advice in the right places, then you know, things are going to work out. And we ended up, so we planned to go for a year. We ended up not staying for an entire year because we really underestimated the homesickness that was going to happen. So that was literally the only reason why we came back early. But we still were living there for about 8 months. So,
And
you know.
he worked as a landscape architect there.
Yeah.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah, and I got a job teaching English of all things. So I was teaching Thai people English, which is a bit of a joke, but you know, it was something to do. It was again like I got the job more because I needed something to do. Because while
Yeah.
Alex was at work all day, I was literally like twiddling my thumbs, you know, with not really much. I wrote a lot of letters because again, there was no email. Know,
Yeah.
I keep repeating that, but I know there's probably a lot of people listening who can't even imagine a world
Like,
without
when did
being
the
able to
internet
send an email.
start? Haven't we always had the internet, the interwebs? It was all better before that, I feel like.
I totally agree. I totally agree. Like with traveling, you know, like the how you can just like overplan everything now, I think takes a lot of the adventure and excitement out of it. It for sure it makes a lot of things easier too, but yeah, I mean it was just more fun and adventurous back then, I
Well,
think.
the world won't tell you this, but there is joy in struggle.
Yeah, exactly.
Right? Like, I think of my husband and I getting into the train station in Paris, and no one wanted to help us in any way. It was so cold and unwelcoming, and we were so lost and we were so confused. But like in those moments, if we'd had the internet, if we'd had our phones, we could have like looked things up. We couldn't look anything up. We couldn't do anything, and we only had each other. And those
Yeah.
experiences grow you as a couple, right?
Yeah.
Like they're
For
annoying,
sure.
but they grow you. And so I think a lot of there is joy in struggle. That's biblical. Even there you go, people. It's true though.
I think it even, like, you know, grows your brain.
Yeah.
Because you know, you have to spend more time thinking about what you're doing, or how you're going to do it, or where or when or how, or, you know, all the things, instead of just like, oh, I'm just going to Google it. Like, where's the closest hotel or the closest restaurant, or, you know, whatever the thing is that you need.
Totally.
So, yeah. But listen, I haven't even got to the most exciting couple of risks that I've taken, that I took later on in my life.
Let's hear it.
The first one would be when Alex and I decided that we were going to put everything we owned in storage and take our then 10-year-old and 12-year-old sons to Argentina for 6 months.
Ooh.
And this was a lot more recently. So that would have been in like 2009, I think. Yeah, 2009. Yeah, because we came back. It had just turned 2010 when we came home. So we pulled them out of school. So just a little backtrack. We had already bought and sold two houses at this point, and we made some decent money off of the sales of those homes. And then we moved back to Toronto. We were living outside of Toronto at the time. We decided to move back to Toronto for work for my husband. We didn't buy a house because we weren't sure where we wanted to buy. And it was like at a time where the housing market was kind of like, they kept predicting that prices were going to go down, which absolutely never happened.
Yeah.
But anyway, so we decided we would rent, you know, and when, so we could just like figure out what we were doing and everything. So we had a bit of money put away from, you know, the sale of the previous two homes. And we're planning to use that money, you know, for a down payment on another house. And then we just decided that we were going to take not all of the money, but that we were going to take a chunk of that money. And we were just going to take off and go on a big adventure with our kids. And I have to say that probably was one of the biggest risks that we ever took, next to, you know, me starting up my own business. But from a personal perspective of a risk, I mean, pretty much everybody that we knew, even close friends, thought that we were insane. Like, what are you doing? I quit my job. I hated my job anyway. And I was already, I had already left. And then my husband was also in a job that he didn't like. So he had no problems, you know, leaving, and was just like, I'll find another job when we come back. And yeah. And so the whole thing started out as a joke. We were literally sitting on our front porch one night having drinks. And I don't remember how it came up, but, you know, maybe it was just, we were wallowing in self-pity, or my husband talking about his job and how he didn't like it and blah, blah, blah. And I think I said jokingly, why don't we just pack everything up and go back to Thailand? Like, it started out with a Thailand thing, right? Like, maybe we should just like pack everything up and go live in Thailand. It sort of started like that as a joke. And then, I don't know, it planted a seed. And then we just started talking about going away for a chunk of time and taking the kids, and it being like a really good time for, you know, their ages and providing an experience for them.
How old were they?
Like 9 and 12, or 8 and 11.
Okay.
9 and 11. They were, yeah, because I know my oldest son turned 12 while we were there. So he was 11.
That's
so crazy. Quentin would have been 8 or 9, because they're kind of like two and a bit years apart. But yeah, so, you know, it started as a joke, and then it just completely morphed into a reality. And we decided on South America, mostly because my husband speaks Spanish fluently and I speak some Spanish. So in terms of, like, you know, like, we're not going to Thailand or somewhere where nobody speaks the language, because we have our kids and everything. And we just want, you know, we want some of it to be easier, right? And we had recently met someone who was working actually as a, like a group tour guide, and he did a lot of trips that were in South America. So we had been talking to him, and we're like, we did talk to him too after we decided and said, like, if we're going to go and have a home base anywhere in South America, where should it be? And he said, definitely in Argentina. So we landed on Mendoza in Argentina. We sold probably half of everything that we owned before we went. Then we packed the rest of it up and put it in a storage unit, gave up our house that we were renting, and literally got on a plane with four backpacks and nothing else for 6 months. And we flew to Mendoza. Well, not directly, but, and then we found in a little apartment and we just sort of used that as our home base and traveled around. We ended up traveling in Chile and Peru and like pretty much all of Argentina. We spent a lot of time traveling around Argentina. Yeah. And homeschooled the kids. Like that was like everybody was like, what about the kids in school? Like they're going to be so behind when you get back. And what if Alex can't find another job? And I mean, nobody worried about me, of course, because I work in the food industry.
Yeah.
I can always find a job. That's no big deal. But, and the money, like you're spending, you're going to spend money that, you know, you're not going to have enough money for a down payment. Like there was all the things, right? And my husband's father, I think, was the most freaked out about it all. But yeah, we were just like, F it.
Yeah.
I don't want to swear on your podcast.
but really, like, I think, like, you'll never, money can't replace those memories. Like the memories and the, oh my gosh, I don't have words. The solidifying of the relationships that happens when you have no one else.
Yeah.
And in our lives now, I feel like people used to live out on, think about people on homesteads, like original homesteaders coming to Canada. They only had each other. They were like struggling and growing and thriving all with those same people going through these life experiences. And that's kind of what you create when you move somewhere where you don't all know the language. You only have each other. You have to like, I don't know. It, to me, there's a level of connection that is created in those atmospheres that you just don't get elsewhere. And that is absolutely the biggest gift you can give your little family of four to solidify those relationships.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And, you know, it turned out that it was not only was it not a problem to take the kids out of school, but their teachers actually encouraged it.
Wow.
Like when we told them, because my husband and I were kind of like, oh, you know, when we meet with the teachers, like we're probably going to get eye rolls and, you right. know, who knows what, right? Like judgment right. from them for doing this. But it was actually completely the opposite. They all said, honestly, like you cannot give your kid a better education than taking them out into the world and traveling in other places and other countries. And they were like, there were certain, you know, we got some workbooks for the maths, especially because math is like something that they can get behind on. And our youngest son was in French immersion. So he had some like French language stuff that he had to keep up with. But other than that, they said, just get them to keep a scrapbook, like a scrapbook slash journal. And they can like keep track of everything that they've done and, you know, write their journal entries and, you know, they're going to learn so much about the history of the place and, you know, geography and geometry and like all the stuff. And it was so true. Like they, you know, they did for sure learn a lot more on that trip than they would have sitting in a classroom at school.
Well, to be honest, I have huge thoughts ever since the pandemic when I realized what my kids were and weren't doing in school.
Yeah.
Ever since then, I'm like, it's fine. Like, and I always joke about, remember Dr. Quinn, Medicine Woman? Remember that show?
Yes, yes.
Oh. Well, she was like, oh, you'd like to be a nurse? I'll train you. And she was like the best trainer ever. So like life is your best trainer. But we've created all these institutions because these institutions make money. They give people jobs. Like we've put so much value on all these institutions. Not to say yeah. that they don't have value because they do. But there is no greater teacher. Like think about you and with a lot of hands-on stuff too, right? Like there's no greater teacher than real life. And
that's right.
Just doing it and trying and starting. But yeah, we make up that we just, yeah, I have thoughts about that. But I think that makes perfect sense, especially at those ages. right? Yeah. Like to have them go and do that. And yeah, the whole thing of keeping a journal, even for them, if they were to do something like that, well, that's your writing. That's your language arts. Like, right. Yeah. Like learning these new words and what did they mean? And just being in those environments is an education in itself. And so that's so cool. That's one of my dreams I haven't done. And I was thinking about it before the pandemic because I want to do a house swap. And oh. I want to go over to Belgium and stay in Belgium and be there for like 2 months or do something where, you know, like we can go and like really live somewhere where you experience the culture, the community, where you're not a tourist, right? Yes. You're not, you know, at a hotel or whatever. That's one of my dreams. So it's so cool to hear you say that because it's like, it gets me like, it gets me thinking.
Well, and it's like, honestly, you know, so we never did end up buying a house.
Okay.
I'm going to put that out there right now. Until this house now, you know, whatever, it's 15, 17 years later, I don't know. Somebody else can do the math.
Yeah.
It's definitely many years later. Yeah. We never ended up buying a house in Toronto. But we have absolutely less than zero regrets about taking that trip because, you know, it honestly was everything and it built so many memories. And, you know, we still, as a family, we still talk about that trip and stories from it and remembering things. And, you know, even our youngest son, who was quite young, you know, and he does complain a bit about, you know, that he wished that he remembered more stuff, but he remembers more than he thinks he remembers, you know, because he'll talk about something that happened that we know is not a memory from a photograph or a video that he saw. Cause we did take a lot of like family, like home videos and stuff like that while we were there, but he'll talk about something that happened that we know there's no record of. So we know he's remembering it, but yeah. And it's made, you know, both of them want to travel a lot too, as they get older. So
it's gives awesome. You that, yeah. Gives you that.
We ended up taking the rest of the money that we had for the house and I opened up my bakery. So we were just kind of like, okay, well, I guess we're not buying a house.
Well, I think you start to realize that that's another thing that society has told you is how you need to spend your money. This is what you need to do to be wise. And really yes. The point is that your money is invested somewhere and growing.
Yes.
That's the whole thing. But in our society, what we like societal norms and we all follow and we fall in line and we follow the norms and we do all the things, but that's just because we as a society have decided that's what wisdom says you should do, but you are still technically doing the same thing. You're still taking your money, investing it and trying to grow it. It's the same. It's just doing it a different way.
That's right. Although definitely taking the money and putting it into a business, especially a small local bakery, most people would say is the dumbest idea because the risk is massive. Like the risk was massive for that for me. Like it's, you know, the success rate of small food businesses is, I don't know the actual numbers, but they're awful. That's all I can say.
Okay. Okay. So let's break that down then. So knowing that this is really risky. You started out with some risks that were lower. You had less to lose. You were a kid. You were, you know, a young 20 something. Then now you're a mom taking a trip with her kids. Now you're really stepping into something that, like you said, you could stand to lose.
Yeah.
How did you do that? Knowing that?
I just was really confident, I guess. Mostly because of my experience, because this is the other thing is that those statistics are not based on, you know, people who have worked in the industry their entire lives or right. grown up with, you know, I grew up with family members as restaurateurs, you know, my grandparents and my mom had a food business as well. But the experience, like, so many restaurants are owned by people who have, you know, barely even worked in a restaurant, let alone like managed a restaurant or, you know, any, and the same thing, it's especially worse for bakeries because so many people, you know, think, oh, it would be so nice to like, wouldn't having a bakery be like so fun? Like, it would just be like the nicest job. Are you making I know fun? You're laughing because you told us.
I just gonna say, didn't I tell you? I would really love to own a bakery. Oh my gosh, that's so funny. And it makes sense. It does make sense. Because even the Cupcake Girls who owned that business on the West Coast, they ended up selling it, but they were like the first cupcake shop, but they were literally people who didn't even know how to bake.
Yeah.
So you're probably right that people they overestimate themselves. Maybe.
Yes. And underestimate how much work it actually is.
Right.
And if you have no experience it's even more work, you know what I mean?
Right.
Especially because of my experience, I could do a lot of the work. So like that saved me on labor too, like especially in the beginning. Because I didn't have to hire, you know, a head pastry chef or a head baker. That was me.
Right. Right.
And then I could train, you know, I decided how everything was going to be. And I trained everybody to do everything the way that I wanted them to do it, you know? So, I had been working just before I decided to do it. I had been working at a restaurant in Toronto that also had a catering aspect to it. It was like fine dining restaurant catering because it was in it was at the Brickworks for anybody who knows Toronto. They did a lot of catered events. So fine dining, catered events, plus they had a cafe, you know, coffee, like a little coffee shop. And so I was doing all of the desserts and baked goods for all of the, basically for three businesses within a business. And I was managing everything. I was doing everything. I was doing the hiring, the training, the ordering, the menu planning, the execution of everything. Like I was doing everything. And that was kind of the catalyst for me, or the light bulb moment where I was just kind of like, why am I doing this for somebody else when I could be doing it for myself?
Especially when you're so committed and you're willing to work such long hours. That's my whole thing, is I'm always like, don't do it for somebody else. Do it for your own pocket.
Yeah. Yeah. And then I have control over the things that I have control over. You know, I can decide who I hire. I can, you know, decide the kinds of hours I want to work. I mean, eventually in the beginning, you have to just work all the time, but, yeah. So that was what made me decide to just do it, you know, and I didn't go into it with rose colored glasses on either. And I think that's the other big piece of it, is like why I took the risk, is because I knew what I was doing. Like I knew what I was getting into. I knew that it wasn't going to be easy, and that it wasn't going to be all like, bakery, it's so nice and fun, and
like me,
I just get to go to work every day and make cakes, because I actually had been doing that as a job for my whole life basically. So you know, I knew what I was getting into, and I was confident that I could do it and that I could do it well, and then it was just a matter of putting the right pieces together, right? Like having a budget, drawing up a proper business plan, finding the right space that was within my budget, like all those things, you know, that had to come together.
Yeah.
And I did that. And then the second part of the risk in opening that business was the location. Because I looked at spaces for a long time, and I eventually found a space that was in what's called East Chinatown in Toronto. So there's a big Chinatown in Toronto that's very famous, but that's in the West End of Toronto. But then there's this little Chinatown in the East End that lots of people don't know about unless they know Toronto. And I mean, they say that it was the original Chinatown. I'm not really sure if that's true or not, but I found a space right smack dab in the middle of this little Chinatown, and went and saw the space, immediately hit it off with the landlord, who is Asian, and she was very convincing. She wanted to give us all kinds of deals, like, you know, the first 3 months for free. Like she was desperate to lease the space out. And I think she was really, really excited to lease the space out to a non-Asian business owner. And at the time I didn't really know why, but I understand, you know, I understood after opening it, and it was because she knew that it was going to be a good fit, because that neighborhood surrounding that little Chinatown had been changing like for the past decade. So it became like a really sort of affluent neighborhood, you know, with homes, like homes selling for no less than $500,000 kind of thing. And this was kind of like a dumpy little rundown Chinatown that like a lot of people who lived in the neighborhood never went there because They just look at it. It's
part
like,
of
oh,
revitalization of the neighborhood. Like she's kind of like a beacon.
Yeah, exactly. And she, I think she felt very confident that I would do well. But here I am thinking like, I don't know. Like, I mean, I was literally going to be the only white person with a business in that neighborhood. So I'm thinking,
like, will people want to support me? Right. Or will they be like, why are you here?
Yeah. Like, you know, gentrification, right, has become a bit of a bad word in bigger cities. Like people don't want their neighborhoods to be gentrified. Yeah. And that was, those are kinds of the first signs of gentrification happening, right? Would be like, you know, this non-Asian person coming into Chinatown, opening up a non-Asian type business or whatever. Like, what are they doing? I felt very like maybe I would be intruding, or like that I just didn't belong there, and that the community and the other business owners would dislike me because of that. Like that was kind of the idea that I had in my mind. But at the same time, we lived sort of in the neighborhood, or like very close to the neighborhood, so we were familiar with that neighborhood. And I just thought, you know what? There's nowhere to get a good cup of coffee on the street. Like there seriously wasn't. And there's people commuting to the downtown from this area that all are the people that live in this neighborhood, right? So I'm like, I bet you a lot of people who are walking past here to go catch the streetcar at the corner of Broadview and Girard are going to, you know, would love to be able to go in somewhere and get like a good cup of coffee and maybe like a scone or a, you know, muffin or whatever, you know, or pick up something for lunch. And so I thought, you know what, I'm going to do it. Like the landlord was really, she did give us a lot of major deals. So it was like kind of an, like, I couldn't pass it up.
Yeah.
In terms of cost, I wasn't going to find anything like that. Not on like with the busyness of that intersection and everything.
Yeah.
So I was like, okay, I'm going to do it. I'm like, I'll sign a 5-year lease. And if in 5 years, like I'll reassess in 5 years and I'll see where I'm at. If I'm not making any money, or if I just decide that I don't want to do this anymore, like I'll just sell it.
Yeah.
You know, and again, it goes back to that mindset. Like, I'm just like, whatever, like if it doesn't work out, then I'll just make another change. Like, I don't get all wrapped up in the like, oh, well, what if this happens? And what if that happens? And what if I lose a whole bunch of money? And what if I mean, I think about those things. I did think about those things. And my husband and I, of course, had, you know, endless conversations about all those things. But
when change doesn't crush you, it changes you. I don't know if that makes sense, but like for myself, I actually thrive off of change. I love it. I've seen the best parts of myself come out through change, through doing hard things, as cliche as that is to kind of say now. But, and that's probably for you, like you weren't crushed by change in the past. So there's no reason to think that you'll be crushed by this if it doesn't, if it's not perfect or it doesn't work.
Exactly. Exactly. And at the end of the day, you know, my risk did pay off. I did end up selling it after 6 years. Well, I decided after the 5 years, but it took me a year to sell it.
Right.
But that wasn't because the business wasn't making money or any of those things. I hit all of my goals, like that I had put in my 5-year business plan, all my, you know, financial goals. I even, one of my goals was to not have to be there full time. Like after 5 years, I wanted to be able to only be in there 2 or 3 days a week. And I got there. Like I didn't even have to be there full time. And so lots of people, you know, when I said that I was selling, were kind of like, what? Like, why are you selling? Like you're running a profitable business. I wasn't making tons of money, which by the way, not many people will with a bakery unless they go big, like big wholesale, you know, commercial. Like you're never going to make a lot of money owning a bakery. The profit margin is very low. But anyway, I was earning a modest income, which was what I had. I was actually paying myself exactly what I had said in my business plan that I wanted to be paying myself at that point in time. I had everything. I was exhausted.
Yeah.
Even though I wasn't, like, I got to a point where I didn't have to be in there every day, Even when you're not physically there every day, when you have a business, especially a food business where you're like, you know, you're dealing with selling perishable items and all that kind of stuff, and you have a staff and you have customers and you have suppliers and you have equipment, you have all those things. Even when you're not there physically, like you're always there.
Yeah.
Like I could never, ever escape it, no matter what I was doing, you know? And that just really weighed heavier on me than I think I ever expected it would. That, like, that responsibility. And after 5 years, I was just like, you know what? Like, I can't do this anymore. The business was at a point where I could take it to the next level. You know, it had grown enough that I could expand, you know, and rent another space where I could then start like supplying more, you know, other cafes and doing all those things and taking it to the next level. And I was just like, every time I thought about doing that, I just wanted to like curl up in a ball in the corner and cry. Cause it was just like, it would be like starting up a whole other business again. And I just didn't have anything left to give. And then I was just like, I could keep going just the way it is.
Yeah.
Status quo. But then I was like, this is what my life is going to look like though. Like, is this what I want my life to look like?
Which I love that you took the time to think about that, because I think a lot of people disassociate in that moment. Yeah. And they just think like, I chose this, this is what it is. But like, yes, there's nothing wrong with pivoting again. Like, to me, that's wisdom. That's wisdom to be like, I always think like, leave when it's still good. Leave before it's dire. And I think people in some way feel like that's quitting, or it's not. To me, it's like, leave when it's good shows that you feel you see potential in your own future. You trust that you're going to have other bright and wonderful things that come along, right? That come your way. And so, yeah, like I think learning to hold stuff loosely in your hand and not just so tightly. And that's what you were doing, is you were like, I could keep doing this, but what will my own mental health, my own physical body, like how much more can I take? Right. Like that's smart to ask yourself.
And I'm like you, where like, I love change and I thrive on things not staying the same for too long. So that was part of the problem for me in my mind. Cause I'm like, people would say like, well, if you have everything kind of going the way that you want it to, then why don't you just keep doing that? And it's like, yeah, well I could, but then I'm going to be bored out of my mind. You know,
like, oh God bless us.
Because then it's going to be every day. It's just going to be the same. And just like it has been for the past, you know, at that point, you know, couple of years where it would, you know, I was doing the same things every day. And I was just like, yeah, I don't want to be locked into this anymore. And I didn't want to keep going deeper and deeper because I felt like you know, like you said, then it's like becomes harder and harder to step away.
It's like, that's a funny thing. And I can't get my head around that either, but yeah, I'm the same. One of my old business owners that I worked for, he said to the company I work for now, he's like, don't let her get bored. And that's a funny thing when I think about it, because it's like, yeah, there are some people that's what they crave, that, you know, that I would call monotonous, ongoing, same old. I know what's expected of me. I know what I need to do here. And for me, that's my cap. Once I know what's expected, once I know what I have to do, once I've kind of mastered that for like 6 months, it's like, okay, let's find a really good new challenge, whether it's in this company or whether it's like the next thing, or, you know. But yeah, that's such a funny thing, is like, well, once I figured it out, then it becomes boring because I know how to do it now. And I think some of us are like puzzle solvers or something. And once the puzzle's back together, I'm like, okay, my work here is done. The last business that I worked at when I came to the island, I came thinking I was going to get one office, then I got two. And then, they had really low engagement. Like, people weren't very happy and whatever. And as soon as we got to like 100% engagement and I'd been there 3 years, I moved on. It's like, there's always something in a job that, whether I articulated at the beginning or not, there's something that I know I'm gunning for. And that to me means like, I've achieved what I needed to achieve here and my work here is done. And I would imagine some people don't maybe have that in their heads. I'm learning it like as I get older, I'm seeing that that's my pattern, but there's definitely something I am looking to accomplish before I move to that next step. And once I've accomplished that, which could be just success in my own mind, not the same as somebody else's. But yeah, like that's funny. We're kind of similar that way. So you'd done it. You'd done what you wanted to do, what you wanted to see if you could do, you did it. And then you were like, okay.
Yeah. Yeah. And I left, you know, although I had a lot of problems making the decision because of that whole, like, you know, am I a failure, right? Because I'm selling my business. But you know, what my thought process took me to in the end was that, no, like I'm really proud of what I've done here. Like I have literally hit all of my goals that I put in my business plan for 5 years. Like who does that? That's pretty rare.
Amazing. That's, you know, amazing. So I'm really glad you told us that.
Yeah. It's like, yeah, no, I'm good. Like I've accomplished a lot here and I should be proud of myself and I should be proud that I'm selling my business because I decided that I didn't want to do it anymore. Not because I had to, because it was failing and losing money, you know, and I did go through a couple of periods of time during the 5 years that I had the business where I thought I was going to have to close because of financial reasons. Like I did, you know, come close to that on a couple of occasions. So, you know, the fact that in the end I could sell it on a high note, you know, was major. And, you know, I mean, I didn't make a huge profit off of the sale either. Cause again, like it's really hard to sell a business like that. Cause they call it a lifestyle business. So it's not really, there's not a huge market for buyers. And you can only charge so much. I can say that, you know, all the money that we had put into it, we had already paid that back to ourselves over that 5 years, which was one of the goals. And then, yeah. So then whatever I, you know, sold it for was mostly my profit aside from, you know, some of the things that I had, the expenses that I had along the way, but.
Which is, I think, so exciting and so incredible because, and I always think, I can't stop thinking of the Kenny Rogers song. Do you know Kenny Rogers?
Yeah.
I think of the Gam.
I'm 52. Of course I am. Of course,
love Kenny. I love country music, but I love Kenny Rogers. I love 80s country, but you got to know when to hold them, know when to fold them, know when to walk away, and know when to run. And
that's right, baby.
And I think the lie in life too is that it's all about the dollar bills. It's not. It's not. Yeah. The fulfillment doesn't equal, like, those two things aren't on the same level. They're like pages in different books. Fulfillment and financial gain. You know, you can have the highest paying job, but if it's not the job you're meant to be in, it doesn't matter. It doesn't give you money. Money provides opportunity and money, you know, but it does not equal fulfillment. And so, yeah, that's where I'm like, that part to me is like totally irrelevant, where to someone else, they'd be like, oh, what was the money when you sold it? Blah, 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 blah. Right. But I'm like, I'm just super impressed though, that you still checked off all those boxes in your 5-year plan. Like that is such a big deal. And that for me would be success. I did it. I didn't come out behind. I didn't come out bankrupt. I didn't whatever, you know, even the connections you made with people in the community. And honestly, where I live in Nanaimo, you know, my town, we have Serious Coffee and we have Starbucks. And I'm so mad about it all the time because there are very few Serious Coffees and I don't love Starbucks. And I loved Second Cup in Alberta and went there religiously. And I am constantly annoyed that there isn't, like the other day, I'm in Parksville and I Googled like local coffee shop. I wanted a local coffee. I did not want Starbucks. I do not want McDonald's. I do not want A&W. So I'm like, bless your heart for selling coffee and baked goods.
Yeah. Well, and I should mention too about the community there. It was actually the opposite of, you know, what I feared, meaning I was welcomed with open arms. And in fact, they, like, the majority of the businesses that were around me became regular customers, and they were thrilled that I moved into the neighborhood, because one of the things that I heard from a couple of nearby businesses was that they noticed an increase in their own business after I moved in. And it was exactly what my landlord, you know, was thinking, is that my business would bring a whole bunch of new people into the neighborhood, which is exactly what happened. You know, there was like a little flower shop kind of plant store on the corner down the street. And, you know, that husband and wife, they would come in every day to my place for coffee.
I love it.
Like, and he said to me one day, he said, "We're so happy that you moved into this neighborhood. I mean, we can't believe the increase in business we have now, especially in like selling bouquets of flowers, because I think people are coming to pick up a birthday cake from your bakery. And then they see that we sell flowers. So they're just coming down the street and buying flowers." And so, yeah, there was a lot of that. And so I was so, I mean, it was just so nice, because I really didn't know what to expect, you know. And it was, I was so happy that it was the reaction to me moving into that neighborhood was very, very warm and welcoming. It was wonderful.
I think a lot of times we underestimate the importance of our role in the lives of other people. And
yes.
And I think when we step into what we need to step into in the time we need to step into it, it really blesses those people that are in your midst.
Yeah.
Because when you're thriving and when you're doing something that is what you're meant to be doing, and you really feel it and everything comes together, there's a reason. And like one of the sayings, it's not a saying, it's like from the Bible, it's from the book of Esther, but it's like, you're here for such a time as this. Like, you are meant to be here in this moment, right, doing this thing. And I think about how, you know, similarly to you showing up now and making baked goods 2 days a week, like how you are there to get some more human interaction, and you're a fun, joyful person, and being in your midst will bless the people that you come in contact with, and just how much doing the things you need to do that make you thrive and make you really, like you said, kind of like live your best life, that bleeds. It's like it bleeds into the other people around you, and it touches them. And you having that business, you think you probably touched a lot of lives, and you brought some life back to that small center that had been kind of lost in the changes in the big city. And I just think that there's that sort of stuff is so beautiful and so important. And it's, people don't talk about that. You know,
that's
like
true.
Having a beautiful place to go with your spouse in the morning and have a nice cup of coffee and a beautifully baked item. Like, those are the small things that make life great. Like,
yeah, I agree.
They are. And so that's where you going and doing those things that you need to do, that's where I really believe strongly in purpose. And the more we live into our purpose and take steps, and then we inspire other growth in other people. And I just
absolutely
just love that kind of thing. And so, yeah, I think it's so cool that taking risks is easy for you now, but I think you've also seen over the years, like we've said, that builds, you know, all those experiences build on each other. And I'm excited to see what your next risk is. A little bit bigger and more dangerous every time, right? But it's cool, because the lie is that you just did a hard thing at 40 years old. No, you did hard things, and you did challenging things and confusing things and things without the internet. You did that for like a lifetime.
Yeah.
And that allowed you, and your kids watching you do that, they'll have more opportunities where they'll be able to step into risk because of what you've shown them through that.
Yes, so, I agree.
Right? You living it out, you having this conversation with me, us putting this podcast into the world, it's like that butterfly effect. It just ripples and someone else hears it. I have one of these podcast episodes, I know you listened to it, where the girl started a farm.
Started a
farm just out of nowhere. You know, and then I have other friends who are like, I guess it's not that hard. I've been making it harder in my head.
Yeah.
You know, and so that's the sort of thing. And that's why we have to share. That's why we need to have conversations like this, so that other people can see that little spark, and it just blows a little bit of wind onto their fire, just enough, you know, to produce some good flames.
Exactly. It's like this, there's this quote that's coming to mind that, and I don't remember who said it, but I think of it often, which is, how does it go? Life has no limitations except the ones you put on it.
Yeah.
you know? And I fully believe that. Like, if you're a person who's not going to put a bunch of limitations on yourself, then you're going to do things and try things and take risks and make changes and do all the things. Life is, you know, I've always, ever since I was young, and I don't know if this is just something that I was born with or what, but I've always had the attitude that I just want to live my life to be happy, you know, and like you said, money has very rarely factored into that equation.
Yeah.
I just figure, like, I only have, as far as I know, I only have one life to live, and I just want to make it good. And I don't want to have regrets. And so when I can do things, when I'm able to do things that I want to do, then I'm going to do them.
Amen, sister. You know what's super fun? I also believe in living without regrets. In relationships, saying the things that need to be said, loving the people that need to be loved, giving the hugs you need to give. Like, I believe in it on so many levels. But the one thing I didn't do in my life, I have like no regrets, except when in 2003, I was supposed to go teach English in Taiwan.
Oh.
Yep. It's like funny, some of the stuff you say. I'm like, oh my gosh, we have like so many little things in common. But that was the year that North Korea and South Korea, well, they're probably not good now. I don't know what terms they're on now in North Korea and South Korea, but it's usually dire. But anyways, I was supposed to go there and teach English. I had a friend that taught English there like 2 years before, and we were so excited. And then SARS broke out. And like, if there's one thing I've learned now in my 40 years is like, I'm never going to let a pandemic stand in my way. I don't care. Yeah. If I meant to die, that's my time. I'm going to go to heaven and see Jesus and I'm fine with it. But yeah, so we didn't go. And it was literally because of the fears of the people in our lives that were like, that's just a bad idea, blah, blah, blah. And that's the only regret I have, is not going over there to teach English. And it's right. Funny because it's like, I don't have any other regrets. I've done all of the things that I wanted to, pushed through when I needed to. And that's the only thing that I listened to other people and I didn't do. Right. And so that's the only one. Maybe one day, years from now, I'll still go do it or something. But yeah.
Or you'll find just something to replace it with. Because probably at this point in your life, you're not going to go teach English somewhere, because that's kind of...
Probably not. Right. But yeah, that's the kind of thing where generally I live without regrets. And the only regret I can think of is not going to do that because of other people being afraid for me, you know? And I mean, but would I go teach English in Russia right now? No. So, I mean, yeah. There are some levels where we need to listen to the wisdom of those around us, but I do think, you know, a lot internally, there's a pretty voice in your head that you're like, yeah, I need to listen to that. And a lot of people didn't think we should move to Vancouver Island. And we've been super successful here. It's been a great thing for us. So, you know, you can engage some of the wisdom of other people, but to a degree. Right. And
yeah. And you have to live your life for yourself, not for everyone else at the end of the day.
Yeah. It's your life. And so, yeah, no, I want to thank you for this conversation. It's been super, super enlightening. And yeah, I could have sat like this. Like, no one can see my face, but like that whole story of you being so young and not being allowed into the United States and going to Vancouver, you were like, this story is not important. I was like, I am in you. I was like, do not, I need to know more about that story, but that's fine. That sounds like the kind of stories I want to hear with a glass of wine.
Yeah.
You know, like, tell me what happened when you were 17. Like, those are the kind of stories that I'm like, oh my gosh, that is. And even as I think about going to Europe, I remember talking to my mom on the phone. I called her at 7 a.m. and I was outside of Kensington Palace where Princess Diana lived. Right. And I feel like I didn't have enough money to go inside the palace and see her dresses. Right. I think her dresses were in there. Anyways, I called my mom and I'm weeping. I'm kind of missing my mom and dad. Right. And I call and then I'm like, I'm going to head over to Buckingham Palace. I'll talk to you guys later. And so like, I let them go. I go over to Buckingham Palace and there were like bomb threats. I had no idea. There was bomb threats. And I guess George Bush was coming and they hated him. Like, it was like so bad. They were like, everyone hated him. There were all these posters with blood on them. And I thought,
oh my God.
really weird, but I was like, okay. And then there I am. And there were like SWAT teams. And I remember thinking, there are a lot of people here. Like, what are these SWAT teams doing? And I, once again, I didn't have Google on my phone. I didn't have a phone that's told me what was happening. And so there was like, so yeah. So I'm like, oh, you survive, you know, you just survive. Yeah. No one got bombed that day. It was fine. But my poor mom like turned on the news that morning and was like, no, because I'd been like, I'm just going to go to Buckingham Palace. I can't afford to look at these dresses anyway. Like, so you think you just survive as a young person and you're like, thank you, God, that I survived, right? But
yeah, well, and sometimes the saying ignorance is bliss is true.
Is true. Yeah, that's why people are so happy.
Yeah. I probably wouldn't have done a lot of the things that I did, you know,
no,
without the blissful ignorance of youth.
Yeah. And I think that's what's so beautiful about being young, right?
Yeah.
That is why it's such a good time to, you know, and I told someone the other day, we were talking about some of the problems in Mexico and some of these like, you know, tourist destination countries. And I said, I like left a foam party at 1 a.m. in a bikini top and a jean skirt and took a cab through Puerto Vallarta. Like, you're like, life choices that you're like, how did I not have anything bad happen? You know?
Yeah.
But to be young and to be older and to be 40 and 50 and still learning and still excited and still ready for the next adventure, that's a big deal. So
yeah, I agree.
Cheers to both of us. Andrea, thank you so much for coming on the podcast. Everyone should go check out My Pocket Kitchen. Sign up for weekly emails. Andrea's bringing beautiful meals right to your table. Well, almost. You have to make them, but she'll show you how.
Yeah. I'm not a home food delivery service anyway.
No.
Yeah.
you have to cook it yourself, but I would encourage you to go get on her email list and check out her blog and check her out on Instagram as well, My Pocket Kitchen. And thank you for sharing your stories about taking risks. It's been super encouraging to me. And I still want to open a coffee shop. Maybe I would just bake my own muffins in the corner, but and not for just to like see the same people every day and like nourish them and give them great coffee. And that's still in my head. So haven't crushed.
Yeah. I do miss the customers and I miss my staff too. Cause I had a really good team of people. So yeah, I mean, I don't miss all the customers, but there's some of them that I miss. Some customers can be annoying. Let's face it.
Some people are the worst. That's just real life. Call it as we see it. But yeah, you're a great guest. We'll think of another reason to have you back on here again sometime.
Well, thank you so much for having me.